living.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. My name is Elaine McMillan. On today's show, Richard Mabian will talk with Monsignor Stuart Sweatland of Donnelly College. Pope Francis is clear in his second encyclical that we must care for our common home. Let's listen and understand how and why we do so. Stay tuned. But first, the environmental news for the week of January 13, 2020. Democracy Now! Reports, President Trump has proposed changing the nation's oldest environmental law to exempt large infrastructure projects, such as pipelines and power plants, from environmental review. If enacted, the changes would exempt agencies from considering the cumulative environmental impacts of projects such as pipelines and mining. In election news, the youth climate justice group known as the Sunrise Movement has voted to back Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders in the Democratic primary. The Sunrise Movement has more than 10,000 members with 318 chapters nationwide. Sanders has endorsed the Sunrise Movement's signature policy, the Green New Deal. President Trump signed an emergency declaration for Puerto Rico after a 6.4 magnitude earthquake killed at least one person and sparked a massive power outage. It's the largest earthquake to hit Puerto Rico in more than 100 years, and it follows a series of strong quakes that rattled the island for days. Flattened homes and inoperable power plants have left nearly 350 people homeless and at least 300,000 without drinking water. In Canada, Indigenous leaders issued an eviction notice to the workers of a pipeline company building a gas pipeline through First Nations territory in British Columbia. Although first the Coastal GasLink workers reportedly complied with the eviction notice and vacated the work sites, construction of the pipeline resumed Tuesday after a few days. NPR reports, Missouri's Flood Recovery Advisory Working Group's focus on repairing and strengthening levees will not do enough to protect communities from floods, according to environmentalists. NBC New York reports, bottled water producer Crystal Geyser pleaded guilty last week in Los Angeles to federal charges of illegally storing and transporting hazardous waste containing arsenic. Crystal Geyser's parent company was charged in 2018 with violating the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act and Hazardous Materials Transportation Act because of its failure to disclose information regarding arsenic in wastewater transported from the bottling plant in California. And now, our show.
Good evening. Good evening. This is Richard Mabian, and Happy New Year's. I just realized when I sit down, this is the first time I've been on the mic this year, and I want to hope that everyone had a beautiful ending of 1 year, and the new year has started out in a very positive and exciting way. If not for the guests that I have on tonight, I would probably spend some time sitting here talking to you because a lot has gone on since the last time I was here. I had to attend a Brownfield conference out in L.A. That was a tremendous experience. I got a chance to meet and see and talk to some really fantastic people who hopefully eventually will have a chance to be here, especially in Kansas City, Kansas, to work with us on some of our issues that we have over there. We have we call them the Triad, a group of social service organizations in Kansas City, Kansas, that's made up of El Centro, the leading Latino organization, EOF, the leading non-poverty program in the state of Kansas. It's been there since 1964 when Johnson gave out his War on Poverty Declarations and Act. And then we have Donnelly College, which is the college where our speaker for our guest for the night is. But those three entities were able to work together and to receive what is called a Brownfield Job Training Grant. And that's like the first in history of that happening in this area. And they will now be able to start teaching the low-income communities in their each individual areas job training skills based on the environmental work. And that's something that for us to start having marketable skills, so we have to get people put back to work. So we're really excited about getting that. Hopefully now we'll have it for as long as we're able to produce and make it work. We have businesses that have agreed to take a look at our graduates. And then one of the aspects of the program is that a graduate has to pass a 40-hour Haswappers class so that if, in fact, there is any disasters occurring in this planet, especially our nation, as far as the floods in Houston, the hurricanes in Florida, the all of a sudden earthquake in Puerto Rico, that all the graduate has to do is get there, and they're guaranteed a X amount of dollars, a very nice salary for being able to work to help get those places put back in shape. And it just so happens that EOF had set up to take us to attend a poverty conference in Puerto Rico. Of all times, Puerto Rico had an earthquake. So I got to go because of my association relationship with them. And the executive director and her right hand, and then one community guy that's on the board of directors also went. And so he gave them a chance to see what it's like to enter into some disaster area. So now they can start talking to their clients one-to-one, face-to-face, not about something that they heard, but about something that they actually experienced. So maybe I get a chance to talk to you down the line, but I don't want to take any more time away from this, because this is my guy, y'all. Why don't you introduce yourself there, Monsignor?
Well, it's great to be with you, Richard. I'm Monsignor Stuart Swetland. I'm the president, the seventh president of Donnelly College. I also have the distinct honor to be a professor there. I teach leadership and ethics. Matter of fact, this semester I'll be teaching environmental ethics, so yes. I'm excited about that.
Yes, and we go back in history. You go back a little history, so all you folks out there that may find something that we're talking about that you would like to call in on, I'm going to give you the number right now, 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534. When I had Monsignor on here with me before, he had recently returned from Rome, wherever the Pope is. That's where he had come back from when the Pope handed out his encyclical. And he had one that had been signed, but he got his from the Pope. So you know you're dealing with a high-quality person sitting here. And he came on the show, and he explained to us what that encyclical was all about. And I think that was probably one of the most powerful shows we've had. And so when we got a chance to want to come back, he kind of came to me wanting to come back, and I was going to him with the same idea. You know, everyone I've been having as guests this year, I've been dealing with them on what have we accomplished in the last 10 years. So we're talking 2010 to 2020, a decade of environmental conservation, whatever, planning, actions, activities, education, empowerment, all of this has been going on. So I'm having the guests when they come in to on their own. I know, no, I don't have any guidelines of the other than we want to hear what was you expecting? You know, and then we'll move to the next phase after break and go into what were you able to accomplish? And then we'll end this with where do you see us going? And I think we're getting ready to have a very outstanding show. So I'm going to come back to you, Monsignor, and say, how would you like to begin with this? Where would you like to go?
Well, I think the obvious advance made in the last 10 years on environmental issues is awareness. We made I would say we made some progress overall in many areas, but there's so much more to do, and I think we're falling behind, especially here in the United States. But this awareness in consciousness is a first step in so many problems. Right. You can't fix it until you realize you have the problem. And we have a deeper awareness, and we have a deeper conscience on most people in the world, especially – and this is one thing I think Pope Francis has really helped – he talks constantly about the fact that we have one world, our common home. Mm-hmm. He even personifies it and talks about it in terms of our sister, the earth, or our mother, the earth. And I think that is necessary to have that kind of language. Because you and I are old enough to remember when it was so easy to slip into the language of, well, there's the first world, the mm-hmm. second world, the third world, mm-hmm. even sometimes the fourth world that fell even behind the underdeveloped reality. Well, from my perspective as a Catholic priest and as someone who believes that God created everything and holds everything in being, He only created one world, and it's human beings that divided up into a first world and a second world, a third world. No, there's one earth. It's our common home, and we're all responsible to take care of Mother Earth and to do that with great prudence and great devotion to each other, because it's one way we serve one another. I believe the awareness of that inclusivity is there, especially as you and I have talked so many times, that environmental ethics can't forget the poor.
Right.
And it can't forget the poor first in the fact that we still have so much underdevelopment in our own nation and in the world that has to be addressed. And second of all, because it's the poor parts of the world that usually have the greatest impact of environmental injustice. But third of all, and this is where we're working together on this project, those that are without can maybe be some of the hands and feet that we need to address these problems if we can train and focus and help them also, you know, take care of their own neighbors and others in ways. So environmental justice has to be both for the poor and by the poor.
Right. One of the things that I stress whenever I'm speaking to especially students or any group, it doesn't matter, senior citizens on down, is that it's really not about us. It's really about our future generations. And we need to be in a position that we're able to teach them to have a love, and I repeat the word, a love for science and technology, because if they don't, when they grow up, they will be unemployable. They say that 67% of the jobs that we have right now will no longer exist when this generation out here that's going through school grows up. So I'm saying we need to be in a position to get them. It's got to be more than a class. This is more than go to school, read a book, sit in a class. This is, comes from the heart. Hmm. And that's where that awareness and that consciousness. That consciousness has to be a factor.
Right. And it's a great example of both and. You know, I had the good fortune because I went to the Naval Academy and served in the military like you did, serve in the military, before I became a priest and before these issues were on my radar screen. And I was trained as my first degrees in physics. You know, I was trained in the hard sciences because that's what was necessary at the time. But Len, also the Naval Academy, an interesting commitment to, I think, sound pedagogy. They insisted that we have a grounding in the liberal arts. Now, it turns out that that's the area, even though my first degree is in physics, that's the area I've spent most of my academic life is in liberal arts, philosophy and theology. I've got a degree in economics. But if we don't train the next generation both to be scientifically literate and to understand the ethical realities and the economic realities that they face, we are sending them into the world unarmed and unready.
That's right. And that is a negative. And many of the social service organizations who still have a problem of working in silos and concentrating on what their basic agenda is needs to hear what you just said. And that's what I keep telling groups, because it's our responsibility to do this. We can, the teachers and schools' responsibility is to complement what we are teaching our youngsters as we come forward. Unfortunately, in our low-income communities, we don't have the kind of parental guidance that you would like to say, well, that starts in the home. No, that becomes our responsibility to make sure that they do it. I'm very saddened with the fact that in Wyandotte County, which is one of the poorest neighborhoods, you know, in this part of the world, unfortunately, the part in the state, has no wetland. If for our kids to go to a wetland, they're going to have to take them somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I think it needs to be one that's right there in the neighborhood, intentionally made to get them an exposure from preschool up to about the third grade to raw science, so that they can become familiar with it, so they can, we can take them from there to the next level. So I'm with you on that 100%. Okay.
Well, and so we made progress in awareness, and the idea that we're especially this one world, and we've seen, you know, major agreements like the UN, United Nations Sustainable Development goals and the climate, the Paris Climate Accord. These are major, major steps in the right direction. Of course, our own nation's right now unwillingness to abide by some of these international agreements is disconcerting. But I think this, too, will pass if we do our job as far as holding our elected officials' feet to the fire, if you will, on these things. So we've made some real progress, but we have to admit that it's not looking good. I mean, I think we're further along. That's why I say we're falling behind. You know, the oceans are warming. Sea levels are rising. The ice sheets are shrinking. We've gotten declining Arctic sea ice. We've got glacial retreat. We've got decreased snow coverage. We've got increase in extreme weather events all over the place, as you saw from the results of the multiple hurricanes that have hit Puerto Rico. Right. Ocean acidification is happening at a much more rapid pace than the death of coral throughout. I was just at a convention where one of the scientists did a very good job of presenting the fact that we have a mass extinction event going on, what some are calling the sixth great extinction event. You know, biological annihilation, the loss of biodiversity. It's akin to what happened when major asteroids hit the United States. Hit the world. And wiped out species at in an instant. Well, it's not in an instant, but in a biological sense, in a very short time. We've seen mass extinction and loss of biodiversity. And, you know, these things we are falling behind on, and we have to seriously address.
You know, I really want you to understand, and I'm going to take a break here, but that the losing those 1 billion animals out there in, we just had the massive fires.
Right, in Australia.
That caught people's attention. I mean, even in Puerto Rico, because that people were talking, you know, like a billion animals, that meant something. That wasn't, you know, when they first said it was a half a billion, it caught their attention. And when it went to a billion, and I said, it's going to take that kind of catastrophe for people to start realizing there's some reality here. We're going to take a break, gang. I'm going to give you the number one more time. That's 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534.
Did you know your business or organization could be sponsoring this episode of Eco Radio KC? Learn more at kkfi.org/marketing.
What's your point of view? If you've got something important to say, let us know. KKFI recently launched a new community podcast page on our website at kkfi.org. It already hosts an amazing selection of KKFI's on-air programming as podcasts. And we're not done. We want to give you a platform. Do you have a podcast? Or have you always wanted to try, but don't know how? Go to kkfi.org, select Community Podcasts, and click Apply to share your ideas and sign up for classes to learn how. That's kkfi.org/community-podcasts. And we hope to hear your ideas soon.
All right. I'm back again. This is Richard Mabian. I'm here with Monsignor Stewart from Donnelly College. And I'm going to give that number one more time, 816-931-5534. If any of you would like to join us, just call on in. So go ahead, sir. Follow up from that.
Well, you know, these are some of the things we must address, the litany of things. And I think one of the Pope Francis has been one of the leading voices in the world. And just last year, I think I shared with you the document where he had many of the finance ministers from throughout the world, along with the UN General Secretary, together in a meeting in the Vatican. And that happened last May. And during that time, scientists presented, climatologists and others, presented to the leading financial ministers of the world and the president of the UN General Assembly their and here's what the Pope said to them in part of his summary afterwards. He says, during your meeting today, you heard from leading climatologists and experts. Their message was clear and insistent. We need to act decisively to put an end to all emissions of greenhouse gases by mid-century at the very least, and to do even more than that. Carbon dioxide concentrations have to decline significantly to ensure the safety of our common home. You also heard that this can be accomplished at low cost by employing clean energy and improving energy efficiency. And this is, I mean, I hope there's people out there, young people out there thinking, how am I going to be the next leader in industry and science? I'm going to be part of this green revolution that must happen. And he goes on later, and we'll talk about this, I'm sure, later in the program. But part of it has to be a commitment to a simpler lifestyle. The overconsumption of humanity, of the natural resources that God has given us, is one of the real problems. If we're fair to the generations to come after us, we have to leave a globe that's at least in as good a condition as the one we received.
Right.
That means we have to obviously do some things locally, but we have to be thinking globally on these things.
Well, you know, all of my work is done with people. And you're speaking about what needs to be done. I evaluate groups. I have a group in L.A. of black middle-class professionals, all of them making six figures, the whole bit, you know. And since I've been in this environmental world, I've always go out with these friends of mine. And sometimes I spend as much a week. I've been there for 2 weeks just being around them, just getting a flavor of what are they at and what are they doing. And I was just out there 2 months ago. I guess that would have been October. And I got a chance to see that they don't recycle. I mean, I went to dinners, I went to parties, I went to different occasions, and it just dawned on me. I don't go in there talking, hey, you're so bad on this. I just am observing to see how people are really living. Because you said it has to be a greenhouse gas reduction. We need to make people aware of the fact that this needs to be done. And then when you come back here in Kansas City, same thing is happening in our low-income communities in Kansas City, Kansas. We do not have a very active recycle program. Now, I know that's low-hanging fruit, but that's where it begins, because if grandma is not recycling, then that means that the grandbabies aren't seeing that as a natural function in life. So that's where another area that can be addressed for those of you sitting out there. Well, what can we do? Because that's what I'm getting from folks right now is, what can we do? We know we got a problem. What can we do? We can start encouraging people about eating the right food and also dealing with stuff like recycling, why there's a reason. We're having a horrendous problem with what kind of containers you put your hamburgers in at the hamburger joint. Those are areas that's going to have to be addressed. So if we're talking to that future generation, we need to give them something practical over the fact that the ice is melting at the North Pole and all that kind of stuff, to make them aware of the fact these are some things that you can start doing yourself in your own world.
Right. And well, part of it, if I can put my economist hat on for a moment, is in our economy, we are supposed to price things at their real costs. But real costs has to include the externalities of buying something. It's just ridiculous, how cheap our gasoline is, because it doesn't reflect the real social impact of burning that gallon of gasoline. Until we start including the externalities. Same thing with, you know, why do people not recycle? Because economically it makes little sense to them about recycling the time spent. And in some settings, as you know, the pickup and the encouragement is just not there for. But if when I was a kid, we put a little bit of a retainer in every bottle, a penny or two back then, when a penny or two meant something, 5 cents on the big bottles.
Right.
And that kind of deposit, as it was called then, made everybody pick up every bottle you could get something for it.
I agree.
Well, that made the reality of what it costs to deal with bottled soda more realistic. In a similar way, we need to price in the environmental impact of the goods we consume, and that will make us much more conscious of consuming smartly when it comes
now you know you have some states that have started doing it, and you'll see it on the back of the bottle. They'll list the state's name on there, how much it is in this state. And I've always said that would be a really good thing, even when we're dealing with our legislators, start thinking in terms. I speak for Kansas, you all, so you might as well know that would be a great way to start having people pay attention. I mean, even the homeless that are out there standing on the corner bumming and begging nickels and dimes might see a way of being able to find a way they could get them a little cash flow running around grabbing some of these bottles that people are just automatically throwing away.
Right. And even conservatives who believe you know, only in market solutions. There's conservative environmentalists out there. Believe it or not, they do exist. There are what some people call crunchy cons. The crunchy cons out there have come up with an idea of carbon tax where they pool the money instead of the government getting it. It would be rebated back to people equally. But those with the largest carbon carbon footprint obviously wouldn't get back anywhere near as much as it cost them. And those who used a small carbon footprint would get back a lot more than it cost them. Now, that's a typical free market solution, but that free market solution puts a price on the real cost of putting carbon in the environment.
So if a person, let's say, again, I refer to a low-income community, doesn't use that much carbon, you're right. Saying that they will get some type of financial backing?
Right. This is not my proposal, but I've looked at this from conservative economists who do see the environmental costs. They say, well, let's put a carbon tax and everything, but we don't want that extra money to be taken out of the consumer's pocket and given to the government.
Right.
We want it to be given back to the consumer, but now given back, rebated equally to everybody. And so if you only use a little carbon footprint, you're not paying much in and getting a lot more back. It's the people who are using a private aircraft or have a private yacht or have a 24,000 square foot house. They're going to be paying in a lot. And that so it's a redistribution from the wealthy to the poor, and it's a redistribution from those who use a big footprint to those who use just a small.
Oh, that's very interesting. I've heard them talk about the carbon footprints and the carbon tax, but I really never sat and listened to how that's being done. But I can see the incentive. I'm into incentivizing programs. I like Bernie Sanders' concept about the public housing. Okay, we have a caller. Caller, you're on the line. Can you give me – did we lose you? Just a second. We may have lost him. Technology, folks.
Yeah. I do a live radio show every day, so I'm glad I'm not the only one that has a problem.
Are they there? Are you there, caller? If you got cut off, dial back for us, will you please? I think that's the area, the incentive program. I think that the Section 8 program is being abused by the wealthy who have Section 8 homes, and they show on TV, just like the big problem they had here in Kansas City with the public housing. And I think that if we would go to something like the solar farm, but for a person to have a chance to participate in that, there'd have to be some incentive. I know just because you're poor don't mean you get solar farms. You need to be something that you're doing with as a benefit for you in your life that will cause you to qualify to be able to take advantage of that. Then we have to go to policies and see if we can't get that money redirected from Section 8 back over into maybe this particular program to help people start moving up the economic ladder, you know, that pathway out of poverty. We need to have something there that's an incentive for people to want to be a part of it.
Right, and to turn loose our young, our best, our brightest on, you know, give them real incentives to work with renewable resources. I was with them, people who are, again, entrepreneurs and scientists, young people who are working on improving wind capacity, improving battery capacity. There's some really impressive things that can be done. To improve wind, you have to make you have to make them larger.
Right.
And to make them larger, there's some real engineering problems with that. But if we can overcome some of those engineering problems, we can, because it's somewhat exponential, the power that's gained,
right.
We can start really changing how much of our power comes from non-renewable sources,
right.
By replacing it with renewable sources. Again, I was impressed as a kid. I grew up in the era when John F. Kennedy made the challenge in the early 60s that we're going to make the moon before the end of the decade.
Right.
Well, you know, we need us to challenge here in 2020 that we're going to be, you know, zeroing out, you know, our greenhouse gas by the end of 2050, as Pope Francis and the world says we must do.
Right.
And I think we should. But a big step towards that should be what we do in this coming decade.
This coming decade. BPU, which is the utility in Kansas, the Sierra Club, who took them to court at one time because of coal-fired plants, are very pleased with the adjustments that BPU made. In fact, they love to speak to the fact that they have been able to make so many advancements. Okay, we're going to take another break here. We'll be back with you. This is KKFI 90.1 FM.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. When the forecast calls for heavy rain, Helen Lekovich braces for the worst.
You don't go to sleep. You set your alarm. You continuously wake up. You get in your car in the middle of the night. You drive to see what is it doing, how close is it coming.
Lekovich lives in Midlothian, Illinois, downhill from a small creek that overflows during heavy rain. Fast rushing water inundates yards and homes.
It's terrifying. At one point, it heaved my three-car garage off the ground. It has heaved all of my landscaping, the bushes.
She says Midlothian has always had a problem with flooding, but it's gotten much worse in recent years.
We have extreme fast rains. We're getting 1- and 2-inch rains in an hour and a half. That's something that didn't used to happen.
Lekovich leads a group of residents fighting for flood relief. Largely because of their efforts, the region's Stormwater Management Agency is now spending about $8 million to widen the creek channel, enlarge culverts, and divert stormwater. It's progress, but Lekovich says it does not fully solve the problem. Many homes could still flood when the most intense rains strike. So as weather grows more extreme, the risks remain. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Am I back on? Okay, I'm back. I'm sorry about that, folks. We're still working on trying to chase down that call for you. I was just talking to the Monsignor and telling him I really haven't been enjoying this conversation we've been having, because I think it shows where the work that we're doing, and I'm really identifying with the Pope's message more and more, because he's not sitting around talking about attacking and regulating and all that. We got enough people to do that. I'm in the Sierra Club. We got enough people to do that. But what he's talking about is making the responsibility of this climate change concept each and every individual. He's talking about his congregations being stewards of in the field. And I was telling the Monsignors, I think it's awesome in the fact that he came in talking about awareness, and I talk about creating a climate change consciousness. We have no climate change consciousness in our low-income communities. I mean, it could be 150 degrees outside for 5 days in a row, and I guarantee you, you won't see people sitting at that kitchen table drinking that coffee or sipping and having these daily conversations that's going to be talking about climate change. They might say, dang, man, it's been hot as hell here lately, but they won't be sitting there talking about, you know, is this the climate change deal? So that's another the area where we can really work into. Dave?
Yeah, we got Jim on the line. He's wanting to discuss the concept of economies of scale. So that was something we were just talking about a minute ago.
Okay. Jim, you're on line. Will you tell us what part of the city you're calling from, sir?
Yeah, I'm calling from Independence, Missouri.
Thank you, sir. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I was just joining the conversation on what you guys are talking about, the economies of scale here in our in our economy, and I was just wanting to make a comment about how, what about the concept of Mother Nature's economies of scales? If people were to focus more on that instead of the economies of scale of which we run our capitalistic society on right now, and how much raw material have we stolen from her to capitalize from all of our profits in this world?
Okay, so let me try to see if I'm understanding. You're saying that there should be some kind of economy of scale that deals with Mother Nature herself.
And yes. Nature's economy of
okay.
scale. Yes,
so,
sir.
So we as humans are abusing nature, Mother Nature? We're missing.
Correct.
Okay, all right, Monsignor. Yep. Thank you, sir. I appreciate your question. We'll answer you while you're offline, if you don't mind.
All right.
I think, Jim,
have a good afternoon.
Yes,
God
sir.
Bless you. Yes, and I think that it's such an important point. It actually takes me someplace I wanted to speak to before we get off the air today is the Pope Francis, one of his emphases when he talks even to the powerful and the rich about this is that we have to simplify our lifestyles. He calls it consumerism, sometimes materialism, this idea, idolatry of money, he sometimes calls it. Because, you know, the old adage that we have to learn to live simply so that others can simply live. But it's not just that we need to consume less so that others have more. It's also what we're doing to the environment. And here he uses an interesting approach to it. He goes to the Beatitudes and he says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." Now, this is one of the central teachings of Jesus. Probably most people say that the Beatitudes are the central teaching of Jesus. And when we talk about poverty of spirit, we're not talking that everybody has to be desperate and poor. It's the idea of recognizing that everything we have, our life, we say sometimes in the church, you know, your talent, your treasure, and your time, all of it is a gift. It's you receive it as a gift. And when you recognize it as gift, what's the most important thing when you're a kid and mom and dad or your uncle or your aunt or your grandmother gives you a gift is, I heard this so many times from my mom and dad, you say thank you, and they would say, all we want is for you to use the gift appropriately.
Right.
We've been given a gift of Mother Earth. We are the stewards of Mother Earth. Yes, we have dominion, but that doesn't mean we can do anything we want with it. It means it should be used as it was meant to be used.
Right.
And the caller, Jim, is right that we have not been attentive to that for decades, if not centuries. And that is now it's coming home. The problems are coming home to roost. So we've got to address that by addressing the fact that we don't need to consume as much as we do. We can live more simply. And it's necessary so that the poor among us can simply live, but it's also necessary that the next generation, the generation after that, will inherit an earth that hopefully is in better shape than the one we received.
Yes. Jim, I want to add in that I'm with you 100%. And my guru into the environmental world was David Korten, K-O-R-T-E-N, and he wrote the book, The Great Turning. And in there, he discussed the peak oil. And I think that that's probably one of our most available areas to get people to understand what you just said. The fossil fuel that we have been using is coming from a process that takes something like 200 million years for it to be developed, and it's almost gone.
Right, and Jim's got a great point too about what he called the economies of scale. He's right. Of course, we all know the economies of scale in an economic model, but cleaning the environment in one area can help us in other areas.
Right.
We see this. I grew up in the city of Pittsburgh, which when I grew up was an environmental disaster. Matter of fact, my parents moved us. I was an environmental refugee, if you will. They moved us to the Poconos in Pennsylvania because Pittsburgh was a terrible place at that time to bring up a kid. You go to Pittsburgh today, and it's a much more pristine city. Cleveland, the Lake Erie, was on fire. What happened is the people of the United States, starting in the 60s, put their foot down and said, we're not going to live in this kind of environmental, air pollution, water pollution. So, you know, we've got a long way to go. But what happened is one city started competing with another. And if we're given back to the environment, there can be that kind of leverage the other way.
Right.
Where people, you know, begin, the beginning can become, in scripture, we call this the leaven. A little bit can raise the whole mess up.
I hear that I got a guy named Jeff on the east side. Is that my friend, Jeff?
Yes, sir, it is.
Boy, happy new year, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. Yeah. And something that I thought I would relay to you. It, you know, you may remember that we had a meeting about the Kansas Public Service plant over there off of Quindaro. And one of the guys that came to that meeting was talking about, and he had done some study, is talking about the whole idea of the CO2 and the emissions. And his description of it, I think, is one that can go a long way to explaining things to people. And it was like, you know, with what we're doing with this CO2, this layer of CO2 that we're building up above us, is we're smothering our children.
Right.
We're going to smother them. In other words, it's just like taking a big old pillow and slowly lowering it down over over these children. And, you know, I think that's, like you said, it's hard to explain this in terms that people will understand.
Right.
But I think that may be one of the ways that would wake some people up and maybe make them say, oh, I get it now.
Yeah. You know, thanks, Jeff. I appreciate you, man. You know, while you were speaking, you made me think of I had a Reverend Harshfield from here in Kansas City, Missouri. Back in the day, he was making a presentation, and he talked about the man that was sitting on the side of the road waiting for the angel of the Lord to come by, you know. And, I mean, you know, he wasn't lift a finger to help himself because he's waiting on the angel of the Lord to come by. And he said, that's kind of how people are. And even in this environmental circumstance that we're going through, people are thinking that eventually the government's going to do something to make a difference.
Well, the beginning of our Constitution says we the people.
Yes.
I mean, it starts with us.
Yes.
You know, we are the government in the sense that it works for us and we hire them.
Yes.
They're our employees. And we come from us, and in a healthy governmental situation, they go back to the people. And so, you know, there's so many simple things. You mentioned recycle, for example. You know, the Pope has recommended that we look at our thermostats and turn
right.
them down in the winter and up in the summer. And I've got one of those gizmos now that does that automatically, and it's
right.
actually saved me money on
right.
my electric bill. And, you know, I've also – and this is something simple I think we all should look at is eating lower in the food chain. You know, it takes a lot of energy to deal with, you know, the meats and the, just – it doesn't have to be every meal. And I've gone meatless myself.
Right.
I think it's a healthy thing. My doctor tells me it's a healthier thing for me. I'm kind of glad I've lost weight because of it. But – you know, just choosing a meatless meal,
right.
You know, or a meatless day once a week. It used to be something the church did naturally. We
right.
eat meat on Fridays. But, you know, all of a sudden we're lowering our carbon footprint, which if we're all doing collectively, again, I think both Jeff and Jim have a point that
right.
we have to think about future generations and leverage in a healthy way.
Yeah,
and what's better?
Well, you know, and not that I'm contradicting it, but I think that that's what I see as being a problem in our low income community. First of all, I don't think people really care about our future generations like we do, like we're talking, okay? But they still care. There's a lot. We live in a me world. Me world. And I'm starting to see that if we in fact reach those people, the adult population is the one that I'm seeing as being the barrier that needs to be approached to be able to make a difference for that future generation, because when they see Uncle Bob, who was sitting over here being a bum, all of a sudden he's talking about eating right and he's throwing him a little garden out in the backyard because he's learned this. We need to, I'm not saying not deal with the younger generation, but we cannot leave that older one sitting there without some effort to reach them too during this particular movement. They need to be reached.
Right. And I'll tell you, the young, I'm very fortunate being a college president at Donnelly College. I get to see it. But
right.
We did a couple environmental things this past semester we had a teach-in
right.
on one of the Fridays. And it was the most well-attended event because the young generation get it. You know, if you want to act and be with the young right now, you know, get hot on the environmental issue because
right.
they get it because they know it's their future.
Yeah.
So if us who are a little older can start setting that
yeah.
good example,
yes.
I think, again, we can leverage some things. And I think Kansas City, the greater Kansas City area can be a model if we really, you know, work together
yes.
on how we can help one another in this area. Because as the Pope says, one world. It's also one city here, one city in our region.
Right. And I have one guy that's with the NAACP with me. He talks about all politics is local. We need to start focusing more in on what we're actually doing politically locally. I mean, if we don't have the caliber of person that's in office that's really addressing and working with us, then we need to make that an issue. Dang what they're doing with Trump and D.C. and the Democrats and the Republicans. We need to focus in on what's happening in our community to make sure that they're addressing our needs. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the point. But it's always like this when we get together. We get started, and we can't have so much time in between you coming back. I know you're a busy man. It's not like you're not. But I really appreciate you coming. I think you do a stellar job bringing in a part of this conversation that people aren't hearing. I don't think the people, no one's known that the Pope had a finance session with the UN and came up with these kinds of conversations. So I think it's great having you, and I really appreciate you for your willingness to come in here and do that.
It's always great to be with you, Richard. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, sir. All right, we're going to turn this back over to Dave. I think we're there.
Yeah, I think we're about ready to head into just some pre-recorded things. We got This Week in Water and Current Cast and our calendar coming up here, and then we'll move on to Fiesta Musicale at 7 o'clock. So thanks a lot for listening, and keep it tuned to KKFI.
Very good.
Here's the calendar of events for the week of January 13th, 2020. On Wednesday, January 15th, noon to 1 p.m., the Science Matters Brown Bag Forums, Reversing Global Warming, will be in the Helzberg Auditorium of the Kansas City Public Library, Central Library, 14th West 10th Street, KCMO. Bob Grove, president of the Climate Council of Greater Kansas City, will introduce the latest research on global warming and examine solutions that reduce emissions of greenhouse gases and remove excess carbon from the atmosphere through sequestration. The Blue River, a documentary that shows the story of Kansas City's Blue River, is still being written, and as we all write it, whether we know it or not, we are telling something of our own story and the story of our area. Premieres Thursday, January 16th at 7:30 p.m. on Kansas City PBS. Thursday, January 16th, Right to Harm screening and panel discussion, 6:30 p.m., Screenland Armor, 408 Armor Road, North KCMO. An expose on the public health impact of factory farming. No charge to view. For more info, contact lauren.schomburg@gmail.com. Thousands of migrating bald eagles can be seen during winter months at Missouri Department of Conservation Eagle Days events. Find eagle displays, live eagle programs, and kids' crafts at many events. St. Louis, January 18th and 19th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Old Chain of Rocks Bridge, south of I-270, off Riverview Drive in St. Louis. Call 314-301-1500 for more information. And in Springfield, January 18th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. and January 19th from 12:30 to 4:30 p.m. at the MDC Springfield Conservation Nature Center. Call 417-888-4237 for more information. Saturday, January 18th, 10 a.m. to noon, January Climate Conversations are hosted by the Resilient Activist at 7039 Mission Road, Prairie Village, Kansas. Saturday, January 18th, 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Free State High School, 4700 Overland Drive, Lawrence, Kansas, the Jayhawk Audubon Society is again hosting its annual Eagles Day with field trips to view eagles in the wild. Sunrise Movement KC January Open Meeting will be Sunday, January 19th from 6 to 8 p.m. at 3800 Troost, KCMO. EarthCare Forum on the 100% Renewable Energy Plan for Lawrence, Kansas will be January 19th, 9:40 to 10:45 a.m. at the First Presbyterian Church, Fireside Room, 2415 Clinton Parkway, Lawrence. Presenter Jackie Carroll is the chair of the Lawrence Sustainability Board. For more info, contact tjholcomb@gmail.com. Please listen to Eco Radio KC next week. We will discuss concentrated animal feed operations. It is important to understand modern meat production. These items and more can be viewed at the Eco Radio KC Facebook page. Stay tuned now for Fiesta Musicale.
A salamander that's hell-bent on clean water. On this current cast. At more than 1 foot long, the hellbender salamander is the largest in North America. Flat, brown, and wrinkled, it has lived at the bottom of streams and ponds for millions of years. But that legacy is threatened as hellbender populations shrink. Conservationist Greg Lips says the decline is due in part to decreased water quality. As sediments and pollutants fill the water, salamanders suffocate and die.
When you kill off a hellbender population, they don't come back. They really are the ultimate water quality monitors.
To improve water quality and help save the hellbender, we can use the three R's: reducing sediments, replacing streamside forests, and repairing stream banks. Current Cast, produced with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future and made possible by the Foundation for Pennsylvania Watersheds. Online at currentcast.org.
Competing with camels for water? That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report.
I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
The bushfire catastrophe in Australia worsened last week as hot, dry, and windy conditions caused two large blazes to merge into one megafire, covering about 1.5 million acres, the size of Delaware.
The huge conflagration is only one of almost 150 fires in New South Wales after years of drought. The Washington Post reports that conditions were so extreme Friday morning that forecasters issued a warning for a severe fire-generated thunderstorm in northeastern Victoria, specifically for damaging winds.
Towering clouds have appeared above the fire zones, the most fearsome of which are known as pyrocumulonimbus. They are fire-generated thunderstorms and can rise up to 10 miles or higher, but contain little rain. In some cases, they look more like explosions and can generate their own tornadoes.
The bushfires have been so intense that they've pushed smoke particles into the stratosphere, where they can travel thousands of miles and even influence regional and global climate.
The fires are raising concerns about drinking water quality, as treatment plants have been damaged or impacted by fire-related power outages.
A release from the University of New South Wales in Sydney describes how the loss of trees and ground cover has made the soil more vulnerable to erosion, and when the next big rainfall event comes along, runoff will wash a lot of ash into waterways and reservoirs.
About a billion animals have succumbed to the blazes, and in addition, officials in the northwest of Australia approved the culling of 10,000 feral camels after complaints that they are endangering humans as they search for water.
One person told the Australian newspaper that her community had been inundated by wild camels knocking down fences, getting in and around houses, and trying to get water through air conditioners. CNN reports that there are believed to be more than 1 million camels in Australia, a number that's rapidly growing.
Inside Climate News reports that scientists are saying that as the Australian fires burn, we are witnessing how global warming can push ecosystems past a tipping point where they will not return to what they were and will transform into a different type of environment.
The climate crisis led to nationwide protests in Australia on Friday, with thousands taking to the streets calling for the resignation of Prime Minister Scott Morrison due to what they see as a lack of action by his administration.
As the climate crisis continues, President Trump proposed last week to sharply limit environmental reviews under the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA.
Mother Jones reports that agencies would no longer be required to consider climate change when evaluating the environmental effects of pipelines, power plants, oil and gas drilling, airports, highways, and other development.
The overhaul is aimed at speeding up energy projects and other development by limiting the number that require in-depth environmental review and expediting the process for those that do.
Most concerning to environmentalists is that the proposal would allow agencies to not only ignore a project's vulnerability to climate change, but also its cumulative effects on global warming.
It's not at all clear that the president's proposal to change the way NEPA is administered would withstand challenges in the courts. The proposal now faces a 60-day public comment period, and public hearings are scheduled in Denver in Washington, D.C. in February.
On Saturday, January 11th, a 5.9 magnitude earthquake struck off the coast of Puerto Rico, one of a series of hundreds of quakes that have recently hit the U.S. territory.
The trembler knocked out power to areas where it had just been restored, following an earlier 6.4 magnitude quake on Tuesday.
CNN reported that about 300,000 customers lost access to potable water, and an official in one city said that the situation is worse than after Hurricane Maria in 2017.
Authorities provided tents to help residents sleep outdoors in some places because of fears that buildings could collapse. The House of Representatives passed legislation on Friday to broadly regulate PFAS contaminants, also known as forever chemicals.
PFAS compounds are used in a variety of products, such as raincoats, nonstick cookware, and firefighting foam. They're considered forever chemicals because of their persistence in the environment and in the human body, with 99% of people tested found to have PFAS traces in their bloodstream.
The House bill targets PFAS contaminants that have been leaching into water supplies across the country, and the Hill reports that Democrats have argued the legislation is necessary due to a lack of action by the Environmental Protection Agency.
However, passage of the bill came over objections from the White House, which accused Congress of sidestepping the EPA. The administration threatened a veto, even if the bill made it through the GOP-led Senate. And finally, for those of us who garden, it can be a bit distressing to see the leaves of fruits and vegetables bug-bitten and full of holes. But according to new research, insects noshing on your vegetable patch might be a good thing.
Scientists at Texas A&M say that bug bites on the leaves of organic fruits and vegetables can trigger a defense mechanism that increases antioxidant compounds in the produce.
Plants naturally react to threats in the environment by producing specialized chemicals to ward off predators. Some organic farmers claim their crops, including bug-bitten ones, have more of these compounds than non-organic plants, and that the chemicals can help our immune systems.
The researchers at Texas A&M wanted to fact-check that claim, so they mimicked insect bites on strawberry leaves a few days before harvesting the fruit. When they measured the berries for antioxidants, they found they had higher concentrations.
Organic farming has experienced continued growth in recent years, and there's increasing demand by consumers. Displaying produce with a few imperfect leaves may one day be a selling point.
That's it for This Week in Water. We'll see you next time.
Radio is produced by a team of collaborators, including yours truly, Craig Lubo, Teresa Wilkie, Dave Bennett, and Brent Ragsdale. Thanks to Ryan Porky for our theme music. I'm Richard Mabian, reminding you to give your feedback by contacting us at ecoradio@gmail.com or reaching out to Eco Radio KC, our Facebook page.